So today I'm delighted to have with me Leslie Morrissey. Now, Leslie is one of these people that I tend to put into the category of being an expert in what I call the black arts. Because to me, any sort of copywriting and indeed sort of marketing at all, I consider to be a black art. But Leslie is one who will give us the secrets of that black art, I hope, today. Leslie has always been involved in writing, right from when she was a child, and then eventually did the writing course and wrote features for newspapers and magazines. And over the years, Leslie's learnt not only what people read, but how they read too. And so those are some of the tips that you're prepared to share with us today. Is that right, Leslie?
Absolutely. I'm interested in being called someone who is black art. I don't see it like that at all. But then I guess I probably can't do some of the things that you do. So we all have our specialisms.
We do. But it seems to me that we're surrounded by the written word. And yet those of us, and I'm sure many of us who are listening, anybody who runs their own business at some point has to get to the stage of putting down in writing what they do. And that's where it becomes a lot more difficult, I think.
It does, and a lot of people, I find, because they're so involved in their business, and it applies to all of us, even those of us that do write for a living, you do get very inwardly focused, and you're so passionate about what you do that you're dying to tell everybody, and you tend to get hung up on what we do, what I do, rather than what you want. So a lot of what the actual content is the focus needs to be right. So you need to be focused on the reader rather than on what you do as a company or as a provider of services or products. And that's half the battle, because there's a chap called Guy Levine who's a bit of a web guru type, and he always says, I hate websites that have been weed all over. And I have to go with that, because you look at the average website and it says we this, we that, we the other. And as a visitor, I don't want to know that. I want to know you. I want to be talked about as what I get. So that's a good start, is to actually, there's another company, and I can't remember the name of it, they have a thing called a WeWee monitor that you can actually run your website through, and it tells you the ratio of Wees to Us on the site.
Well, if we find out what that is, we can always add it to the notes of the interview, but that might be quite interesting. So how do people read then, Leslie?
Well, it depends on what they're reading. They read screens differently to paper. It depends on the layout to some extent. The obvious thing, and this applies to just about everything, is you have to get someone's attention to start with. And if you haven't got a reasonably strong headline that hooks them in, you won't get the rest of the message through, because they just don't stay with you that long. And that applies to every page of your website. It applies to A4 flyers, trifold flyers. Trifolds are those little things that fold up to go into an ordinary DL envelope. They're an A4 page folded in three. And so many people have their logo and their name on the front, but they don't actually have anything that induces me to want to open it. And if you think about it, why would I open this and read the rest of it if there's nothing on the front that says to me there's something important inside that you need to read? So those sort of things you need to be aware of. The headline is the hook, and mostly it needs to be something that leans on either the pain that somebody is experiencing, as in, yes, that's my problem, or a benefit, which is, yes, that will alleviate the pain I'm suffering. So you go at it from one of those ends, which means you need to know your reader. And this is a problem I have with most of the people that I work with, is I say, who's your target market? And they say everybody or anybody. Yes. And you can't target anybody or everybody, because they're all different. Realistically, you need to niche it down and create a picture of your ideal customer. And that's a good place to start, because then you know who you're trying to target, and what you write then will fit into that framework. People say, oh, well, yeah, but what about this market? Well, just do one at a time is the answer. Niche down, hit one market. You're better off specialising in one market and then adding another one later than trying to spray everybody and missing everybody, because that's generally what happens.
So people might end up with a selection of different leaflets that are addressing the issues to their different markets, or even different website pages, presumably.
Absolutely. And strangely enough, when you get down to it, the content often isn't that different. It's the headline and the hook in that's different. That's all. It's just altering what you write and spinning it a little bit.
Many of those headlines that I've seen tend to be questions, or
yep.
They're encouraging people to discover or learn or experience, those sorts of...
Absolutely. And things saying you can have or and offering them a benefit. And people don't understand that you hear salespeople talking about features and benefits, mm-hmm. but actually there's three elements. There's features, advantages and benefits. And basically what they are, a feature is what it is, which is the nuts and bolts of whatever you're promoting. An advantage is what it does, which salespeople get mixed up with benefits, because an advantage is a nice to have. The benefit is the emotional trigger. That is what most people buy on. It's the what's in it for me. And if there is no what's in it for me, it hasn't got any power behind it. Because nice to haves are all very well, but they don't hit those hot buttons that you need to hit. So it's really, no. This is where we go back to, how well do you know your target audience? Do you know what it is that they're suffering from? Because if you know what their pain is, then you can hit the hot button and they will then start to read. Because let's be honest, when people look at a document or they arrive at a website, there's a reason for it. If they haven't just, received miscellaneous stuff in the post, which they tend to open over the paper recycling sack, they have come for a reason to your website, or they've looked at your flyer for a reason. If you don't immediately reassure them that they're in the right place and that they're going to read something that will address whatever the reason is, you might never get past that first page or the first headline. So it's really important that you do know that.
So if we think about a web page, for instance, and a sort of simple information website, rather than a website where they're trying to sell a specific project or product, there were some guidelines that I know that you've shared with me before about how people read when they're looking at a web page, because I found that quite interesting in terms of how people take information in.
Well, there's the web pages are, you're right, there are two sorts of web page. There's the normal company web page sort of website that we're all used to, and there's that sales pitch website, which is has a formula to it. There is a way of writing those, and some people are very good at that, and I know how to do that, but most people aren't looking for that. They're looking for the more traditional end of things. And I always say that a website should be a flat race. It should be a derby, not a grand national. There should not be obstacles to stop people jumping. Things like splash pages, that's that page that comes up and usually has some whizzy things on it, and eventually says, click here to enter, maybe, if you can only find it. Now, why would you make people work that hard? Most web surfers have the attention span of a goldfish, which is why my report on this is called the Goldfish Report. You have a few seconds to get their attention. You don't waste it by putting things in between them and your message. So the first thing they need to see is a headline, and therefore it should be big enough that it is the biggest thing on the page and you don't have anything interfering with it. Your branding normally goes across the top of the page, but the eyes normally hit somewhere about two-thirds of the way up or a third of the way down the page. And that's where your headline needs to sit, is in that what I call prime real estate. Because if that's not the first thing they see, and if it's, if it's 14 point bold, they won't read it because it's too small. It needs to be bigger, noticeably bigger than everything else on the page. Your branding, your masthead that goes across the top, is purely there for them to know that every page that looks like this belongs to you, and it should be in the same as anything else you send out, your letterhead, your business card, any brochures, flyers, etc. Once you've got them hooked in, people don't read website pages, they scan them. And according to Jakob Nielsen, who's the granddaddy of usability, basically what they do is they scan in something like an F. So they go across the main top part of the message. Then they'll sort of, the eye runs down and they just pick up the odd word here and there. So keywords in bold would help. Not in capitals, because anybody using a web reader, if they're visually challenged, it shouts at them. So you don't use capitals. Bold words and just the odd word, not whole sentences. And then you need your call to action at the bottom. So anything in the last paragraph that says, now I want you to do this, you don't make them work hard to do it. You need to have a link that takes them to the page you want them to go to, or generates an instant email, or gives them your phone number, although it's not very realistic to expect people to pick up the phone on the home page, but it might be in other pages. So you don't want them to have to then scroll back up to the menu to go to the page that you want them to go to, because some of them will, but the problem is some of them won't bother, and you've lost a few people that you might keep. So you don't want anything to prevent them flowing through your site to where you want them to go. Therefore, you need to decide what you want them to do at the end of every page on your site.
Mm.
When it comes to the whole readability issue, that means working with the designer. Now, designers are very talented people. I cannot do that side of it, and I did try and failed miserably. I can't make it look nice and slick and professional. But what I know is something designers often don't understand, is that they see things in visual terms. So what looks pretty on a screen actually may not be easy to read, and because reading is a subconscious process, we don't always realize why we're not getting the message. So things like, and this is one of my pet hates, is what's known as reversed writing, so that the background is dark and the writing is lighter. And it looks slick, but it doesn't work when you come to read it, because the eye picks the darker color up first. Anything that's in normal sized font, sort of say 10-12, not bold, just cuts into that and creates a dazzle effect. Because the eye reads sort of on an automatic basis, your subconscious just picks the words up. But because it's hard for it to pick the words up, something goes on in your brain that goes, this information is difficult. Now, it won't consciously go, I'm getting dazzled by the arrangement of colours here. It just goes, information not going in, must be hard, go and read something easier to read. That isn't what you want to happen when you've got an important message. So if your company colours are dark and you've maybe got burgundy and gold or green and yellow or something like that, you need to make sure that the area with the text in is either white with dark writing on, and it can be your burgundy if that's your colour, as long as it's strong enough and it's not faded, or you need to use a paler tint of your colour on the background in order to use dark text on top of it. It does need to always have darker writing than the rest of the area. The other thing that's hard to read is justified text. I know it looks tidy, and I have so many people say, oh, but I like that because it's in a nice little square block. The longer your paragraph, the more chance of there is of people getting lost in it. And they get down to the second, third, fourth line, and they find they've read the same one twice, or they've skipped a line and didn't make sense. Or better still, they skipped a line, did make sense, but the rest of it doesn't after that. So, you know, it might look tidy, but it actually inhibits people being able to take on board what you're saying. And this applies on print and on screen.
I think one of the other things, particularly with websites, is we all have an About Us page.
Yes.
And again, as you were saying at the beginning of the interview, I think part of the difficulty with putting down, for any business person, details about themselves is that they're very excited about what they do, and there is they are the experts. We do want to let everybody know how great we are. And that's the great dilemma, isn't it, really?
Well, it is. But that's an interesting thing. There's two things that happen about us. I find an awful lot of people's home pages should be the About Us page. In other words, what they've written on their home page is about their company and what they offer. And it's not the right place to put it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you should be talking to your reader directly to get them interested in what their problems are and what you can do to help them with them on the home page. The About Us page, and there's a number of issues with About Us. Firstly, it isn't the first place people will go to look. Mm-hmm. And they tend to go to the About Us page once they've decided they might like to work with you. So it's usually after they've looked at your products or your services page or both. And they thought, yes, they've got what I want. Yes, this is the sort of people or the sort of service I'm looking for. Now let's go and see who these people are. And then they arrive at the About Us page, providing it's called the About Us page. Sometimes the people get very clever and they start calling it Who Are We or, you know, the company profile. And you have to just bear in mind one thing. There's a chap called Steve Krug who's written a book called Don't Make Me Think, which is excellent. Highly recommended. And basically he says, if it says About Us, however hackneyed it is, and you think, oh God, how boring, you know exactly what it is. You don't have to pause for thought. You go there. If it says Who Are We, there's a moment's thought when you go, is that about us? Same with company profile. Is that about us or isn't it? Is it just sort of the sort of financial information company report stuff? So there's a sort of heartbeat while your conscious brain kicks in and you have to think about it. If it's called anything else, people are they just don't understand it. And they sit there going, there's no about us page here. And you've lost them because they won't hunt through all the other pages they can see to find out if there is one. Most people don't have the time.
Mm.
So About Us may be hackneyed, but it's pretty guaranteed it gets people to where you want them to be. When they get there, this is where your opportunity to put your passion in. It's most About Us pages are dry as dust, and they say our company was started in 1893 and we're the fifth generation of the,
yeah.
And people don't need to know that. They almost really don't need to know how many organisations you're a member of and all of that sort of thing. It's maybe nice to have, but what they need to know is who are you, because people buy people. Who's the leader of your team? There should be a photograph of them or a photograph of the team so they can relate to you. It's a bit like the eCademy profile. You know, mm-hmm. Without a photograph, people don't read them. And that's absolutely kosher. So because Julian, the webmaster, has got, you know, the statistics that say so. They don't stay on profiles that don't have a photo. Same applies to your About Us page. They don't stick there if they can't see who they're dealing with. Then you need a bit about your passion. You need to put something in quotes. I'm in this business because I believe this. Something about your values and you know what you deliver to the client. We believe that our team are, you know, take a different attitude because they do this and they do that. So you actually have something that says what sits behind the company, not just the facts, but the passion and the beliefs and the values. And that makes a difference. There aren't many About Us pages like that.
It's interesting, as you said at the beginning when we were talking about the About Us page, that when people see that, they say, oh, is this going to tell me who these people are? And and that's the question you should really be answering, is who we are as people rather than, as you say, the organisation.
And you'll find that the best About Us pages are full of passion and they are real people, and they are the differentiating factor between six websites that are all the same and one with a different About Us page. That's the one that I relate to as a human. I mean, if you put yourself on the other end of it, and I'm visiting a site and yeah, it's got what I want, but so have several others, and you get an About Us page where there's some human being that jumps out of the page at you and obviously is excited about what they do, and you think, yeah, actually, that's the sort of person I want to work with.
It's interesting interviewing you today, Leslie, after we've recently put up an interview with Mark White from Better Business Blogging.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark obviously talked a lot about how people are using blog sites and blogs much more on their websites in order to help really build the relationship and enable people to really understand who these people are. I don't know whether you've... obviously, you'd have seen over the years as blogging has grown.
Oh, yes.
Tremendously.
Blogging's great.
Yeah. Yeah. What's your views on blogging and how people can use it effectively?
I think, well, I mean, I'm a Graham Jones disciple, so I've been on Graham's course, and he actually does say it is a commercial thing because it does get your site up the search engines, because every time you're active on your blog, it sort of registers on the Google indicator, so to speak, or and of course the other websites, where search engines that are out there. But blogging, you know, you don't want to overload people with lots and lots of information. I say this about websites as well. You need to tell them what they need to know. Don't tell them everything that they could find out, because they won't bother. They'll just get drowned in information. And there's so much out there now. Keep it sharp. Mm. Keep it simple. It must have added value. It must have something that makes people want to come back and read some more. So you don't tell them everything. You do 3-4 paragraphs at the most, and you don't have to do it every day. Mm-hmm. You know, whilst blogs did start out as weblog, and I always say to people who've never heard of a blog, you know, think of Star Trek, you know, Captain's Log, Stardate, whatever. Mm. It's a sort of a bit of a diary, but it isn't really a diary so much as a incidences that have stood out, or something that's happened, or something that's come to mind. It's a place where your observations, your thoughts on something can be put into place. It isn't somewhere where you sales pitch people, and that's where people misuse them, and readers get fed up with that. They just don't want to, be sales pitched on a blog. They want something that makes it interesting, makes it useful, perhaps gives them a bit of information they didn't have before, or just wakes them up to something that they knew and had forgotten they knew. So it doesn't have to be wildly original. You don't have to be, oh my God, I can't think of something to write today. It just needs to be an idea or a reminder of something. And quite often the best ones are ones that come from personal experience.
I think that's very reassuring, because I'm sure that a lot of people are put off getting involved in blogging because they think, oh, I'll never have anything to write about, or it's got to be something that's very commercial and professional. In reality, again, as you're saying, is that's not what people want. People, again, want to feel that this is coming from somebody that they can understand and begin to build a relationship with.
Mm. Absolutely. And you really need to think in terms of maybe having a notebook. I mean, if you're like me, I've got to that sort of certain age where wonderful thoughts come into my head and then they go out again. And I might vaguely remember I've had them, but I can't remember what they were. But I jot things down. If I have this brainstorm, I think, oh, actually, that was a good idea. That I'll just put it down somewhere so that I've got it for when I need it later. And I don't have to spend ages going, I had this idea, and I know it was really good, but I can't remember what it was. So it's getting into the habit of carrying a notebook, or even an electronic notebook, if that's what works for you, around, and just putting ideas into it so that when you need to write your blog or you decide it's time for another entry, you've got some material there to work with. Mm. Of course, it's also another way of, you know, you have a brainstorm when you're driving, you ring your mobile phone number and put it on automatic answer and it picks it up that way.
That's a good tip.
I know lots of people who ring themselves on their answering phones and leave themselves messages.
I've not heard of that one before, so
yeah, that's a good one.
You need one of those automatic dictaphones, but you don't. You just ring yourself on the mobile. Great.
Well, yeah, you can do that also, because when you're driving, if you're all mic'd up and legal and that, it's easy to do. But when you're driving, you're in what's known as alpha state, which is frighteningly is a light trance.
Mm.
And it's when you do get a lot of ideas. And if you're on a journey... let's not say around the M25, because you usually end up being very frustrated there, but But if you're on a journey and things come into your head, it's a way of recording them so they don't disappear forever. By the time, you know, a bit more stress has kicked in and you've been to a meeting and come out and all of that's gone again. So it is a way of just catching up with your ideas. You know, have your idea for your book on the M1. It's fantastic. But you just need to keep track of it so that you can do the necessary development later.
What about business cards, Leslie? Are there some general rules for business cards that we can explore?
Absolutely. One of my other things, I always say, the first thing I look at when someone gives me a business card is the back. And I always have this thing about, I know it costs more to double side print, but not that much more. Mm. And the back is an ideal place to market yourself. So many people have a business name that doesn't necessarily explain what they do, and sometimes even their tagline doesn't explain what they do properly either. So once you know, if you're a networker like me and like you, mm-hmm. we all go out and we exchange business cards and we come back with a fistful of cards, and unless you had a deep and meaningful conversation with that person, you can't always remember what it was that they did, especially if they're clever people and they're very good at networking and they ask you lots of questions. So you don't really get to talk to them much about what they do because you're still talking about what you do because they keep asking you things. You need to have something on the back of your card. Now, I know networkers will all say, you need to have space to write where I met them. Yes, you do, but that doesn't stop you having a message there as well that says, you get this, this, and this from me, rather than we do this, this, and this. That's my twisting it back to the you focus. Also, I would say that you need to have your name fairly prominent as well as your brand. And it's surprising how many business cards have the name in the same size as the address. Also, again, reversed out writing, it is quite small text. Don't do it. It's really hard to read. And if you want people to contact you, you don't need to put an obstacle in their way.
Yeah.
And it's keep it clean. You know, I've had people say to me, I couldn't get all that information on my business card. And I've looked at what's on there, and it's the same as mine. It's got the address, the website, the email address, the telephone number, the mobile number. But mine doesn't take over the whole card. I have a biggish logo on my card. It just needs a clever designer to arrange it in a way that works. And it is to find a designer that you work with, that you gel with, and use them to help you. Just don't let them persuade you that because it's trendy to have a dark blue back with white writing on, that if it's got an important message on, you give in to them.
Well, I can imagine all the listeners now rushing off and having a look at their business cards and just checking what they actually have got there.
You can get away with bold white writing on a darker background because it doesn't cut the background up the same way. Mm-hmm. But if you've got a card and your address contact details are quite small, it is very hard to read, especially for anybody who's got slightly dodgy eyesight and is trying to resist the need for glasses. Mm. Some of us have been there already and given in to the glasses, but you haven't always got them handy, and you don't want to be whisking your glasses out every time somebody gives you a business card to try and read it. And I do have a problem. I can't read business cards without my glasses unless they're very clear.
Yeah. This has been really useful information, Leslie. We've covered a number of areas, and I wonder if it's possible to summarise for you what would be the sort of top three guidelines that people should bear in mind generally when they're trying to explain a bit about themselves in written document form.
Yes, I guess the first one is make sure you're reader-focused. Not inwardly focused, so you're focused on the reading, you talk about you rather than we, and that will make a difference. That you understand the reader, that's part of it. If you don't understand the reader, then you're really wasting your time because they just won't get it. The other thing is that you need to make sure there's a hook. Everything that you produce, there needs to be something that engages the reader right away, that's in big enough type and in the right position on the page or on the screen, that says, yes, this is what you need, you're in the right place, which gets them started. Because if you don't get them started, you're never going to keep, you know, you can't get your message over to them. And thirdly is, designers are fantastic. You really do need a good one, and I would strongly advise you to find somebody that you get on well with. But you also need to help them to understand readability issues, that they don't take really good copy and make it very difficult to read by the way in which they present it. And that's my soapbox that I get on and get excited about. So you better stop me there, because otherwise I'll be talking for another half an hour.
Well, thanks once again, Leslie. That's been really useful and informative. And we will have, with this audio download, we will have further details of how people can contact you.
Great.
And that's been a great interview. Thank you very much for your time today.
It's a pleasure. Thanks, Elaine.